18. I think that Bongo is the only reason I didn't have a nervous breakdown on the spot. There are stories of people enduring horrors, escaping war zones, walking for hundreds of miles barefoot, that sort of thing, because they are being strong for their children. I am not saying it's the same thing at all. Bongo, as I've said before, is not my child. He's my dog. Nevertheless, at that moment, he needed me. He was making that horrible fear growl. His back was humped up and his tail was between his legs. I dropped down next to him and put my arms around him to keep him from lunging at an effigy and getting probably killed. He was peeing in terror, which meant he peed on my knee, but, you know, I was feeling a little loose-bladdered myself. Foxy stood over me and gripped my shoulder. I could hear her breathing, harsh and quick, behind me. "We'll leave," I said. "I'm sorry we bothered you. We'll go away and not come back." "You will come with me now," repeated Anna, ignoring me. "My dog can't," I said. I didn't look at the effigies. If I didn't look at the monsters, they couldn't be real. But there were so many, and they were moving, and I kept seeing bits of them, even as I tried not to look. Hooves and horns and rocks and branches like antlers and old rags stretched over frames that weren't remotely human. "Don't look, don't look. If you don't look, they can't see you."
"Then you will be killed," said the man, speaking for the first time.
His voice was thinner than I expected and had a quaver in it, like a very old man's. "I'm not refusing," I said. Foxy's fingers tightened on my shoulder. "This is not me refusing. We'll go with you. But my dog's scared. I'll carry him." I was speaking very calmly and rationally. I remember that. If I could just keep everyone talking, they wouldn't let the things I wasn't looking at get my dog. I said, "I'll carry him," as if it were that easy. Bongo weighs 60-odd pounds. I'm not strong enough to carry something that size very far, but I didn't know what else to say. Anna stepped forward until she was only a few feet from Bongo and me. I looked up at her, and she was impossibly tall. I know I was kneeling on the ground, but before I thought she was 6'4", maybe a bit more. Now she looked 7 feet tall, 8, 10, taller than any human I'd ever seen. She did something with her left hand. The air around her fingers made another moiré distortion pattern that drifted toward Bongo. "No!" I put out a hand to ward it off. It felt like the barest breath of air on my skin as it passed. My hand went through it. The tiny hairs on the back of my fingers stood on end, but that was all.
"He will take no harm of it," said Anna. "It is a charm to calm beasts, that is all."
She made the gesture again. This time it was faster. The distorted air shimmered around Bongo's face like a heat haze on the road. I felt his trembling ease against my chest. The growl died away into nothing. He gave a short, puzzled whine, as if he could not quite remember why he had been angry, and then he turned his head and licked my face. She had just done, what, magic? Was that magic? Of course it was fucking magic. What are you, stupid? What did you think was happening? How did you think the effigy was walking around, if not magic? How are all of them walking around, if not magic? Well, yes. I did not much like the prospect of someone magicking my dog, but if it meant that nobody got killed and Bongo wasn't pissing himself in terror, that was what mattered, right? Hell, if I'd had sedatives, I'd have jammed them down his throat and probably taken one myself. I stood up. My own legs were shaking. Foxy's hand on my shoulder squeezed harder.
"We will go now," said Anna.
"Foxy, looks like we don't have much choice," she said.
Come on, hon. Anna swept her arm in a slow, dramatic gesture, pointing farther down the hill. She was wearing gray cloth wrapped around her, some kind of robe or sari or toga, something with a lot of folds. The cloth hung down from her arm when she gestured, making her look like some kind of classical statue. I focused very hard on her arm and not on the milling shapes just behind it. Sooner or later, I was going to have to look at them, but if I did, I was going to become as frozen as poor Bongo had been. I had to not look. Everybody yells at Orpheus and Lot's wife. Put yourself in their shoes for 5 minutes, and you'd yell a lot less, I promise you. I gathered up Bongo's leash. He walked next to me, tail and ears up, a dog on a walk that was a bit boring, but which held the hope of being interesting. I could hear the effigies walking on the grass. Their feet clicked when they touched stone. My skin was going to crawl off my body soon. I locked my eyes on Anna. She began to walk in the direction she had pointed, downslope, into the gloomy twilight. I could see the bare trees in serrated ranks around us. I was starting to think that the trees would never leaf out, that their nature was just to be empty branches and twisting trunks. Perhaps they were parasitic. There's a fair number of parasitic plants. Beech drops, dodder, Indian paintbrush. My aunt would have a field day. Was I thinking about plants so that I wouldn't think about monsters? You bet your ass I was. I don't know how long we walked. The slope got steeper. I divided my time between staring at my feet and staring at Anna's back. Her colorless hair seemed very bright in the darkness, like fog on a dark night. I didn't dare look around, but I knew Foxy was behind me. I could hear her breathing. I'm sorry I got you into this, Foxy, I said.
Shit, hon. I should have known better than to let either of us get into this.
Stones loomed out of the dimness, three of them, arranged like a doorway. It looked like a scaled-down Stonehenge. I did not want to go through those stones.
Stupid thing to say, obviously. I didn't want to be anywhere near here. I didn't want to be following the holler people with their horrific pets crowding around behind me. But I really didn't want to go through the doorway. It exuded a kind of, not menace exactly, remoteness, like I was about to pass through an airlock into an alien planet. Maybe I could break away and run now, if I tried, and probably the things would kill me. But if I went through those stones, I would be somewhere else, and there was no getting back under my own power. Anna passed over the stone threshold. Nothing obvious happened. She didn't vanish, or waver, or turn strange colors. I turned my head and looked behind me. There were at least a dozen effigies close behind us. They formed a loose semicircle behind Foxy, moving restlessly back and forth. The dim light gleamed on pale bone and sparked on bits of rusted wire. The one nearest me was hunched up like a vulture, shorter than I was. Its head was a broad fan shape, made of twigs tied to... Was that a broken shovel blade? It turned its head. The twigs were bent and crooked, and the hollow places they framed gazed back at me like eyes. There were more than two. There may have been more than 10. The rest of its body was draped in roadkill rags. I couldn't make out details, and I was glad I couldn't. Suddenly, the deer effigy seemed almost tame by comparison. It was too dark now to see the rest clearly. That was fine. I had an impression of ragged bodies, limbs made of bone, and branches wrapped in wire and cord, some of them vaguely human or animal-shaped, some of them not remotely human at all. The twisted ones. the ones the rocks are supposed to resemble, or things made to resemble the rocks. I could hear them moving. Bone clicked and branches creaked and things sighed and sloughed and tapped. Something out there sounded, incongruously, like denim rubbing together between someone's thighs as they walked. Shoo, shoo, shoo. If I tried to run, they would be on me at once. Foxy, I see him too, hon. I nodded. Sticks and stones, I thought. Sticks and stones may break my bones. I didn't bother with the second line. Who gave a damn about words now? With one hand on Bongo's collar and one wrapped around the hickory beads, I stepped through the doorway into the Vorish Dome. Nothing dramatic happened when I stepped over the threshold. There wasn't a flash of light or a crack of thunder. It was just a little easier to see suddenly, as if it was not quite so dim. When I looked down, there was a path at my feet. The grass had been worn away to packed earth, yellow-orange clay with tiny pebbles embedded in it. That part was still like the landscape around the house, anyway. The bare trees parted around the path. Unlike the wicker tunnel, they grew tall and straight, but it was still a long and winding way down. I took a quick glance behind me. Foxy was there. So was the tall, pale man. So were the effigies. The archway stood at the top of the path, as remote and unreachable as a star. Bongo's tail was up, wagging vaguely as he trotted after Anna. I envied him. White stones gleamed like fireflies in the dark, dotting the edge of the path. They were carved in patterns that at first seemed unfamiliar. Then I realized that they were the same as the twisted ones. The designs folded and doubled back on themselves, but they weren't doing the painful eye-burning jitter. I could look at them out of the corner of my eye, and they didn't look as if they were crawling away. That should have been comforting. It wasn't. Either something was happening with my eyes, or maybe that moiré pattern is what happens when an enchantment meets the real world, like heat haze on the road. Now you're not in the real world, so it isn't distorting the air around it anymore. Thanks, self. That was real helpful. A-plus coping mechanism. If the white stones were enchanted, then there had been one sitting at the edge of my grandmother's garden for quite a while. Although, for all I knew, that particular stone was a signpost of sorts, a warning to the other holler people that my grandmother's presence was foul. I wondered how Cotgrave had figured that out in the first place. Ambrose, maybe. Or maybe he'd just stopped seeing the things after he met her. He hadn't written it down. I wished I knew. Maybe I'd have been able to repel the damn things now. Anna turned to follow a bend in the path. I saw her profile. It was impassive, but not serene. A set face with secrets behind it. What had the green book said about the Lady Cassop? That she was the tallest and whitest of them all? Which meant, what exactly? That the author was weirdly racist? That Cassop was closely related to the Holler people? Close enough to summon snakes and do magic with wax dolls? Not close enough to get out of being burned alive? I could believe that the woman in front of me could summon snakes. Frankly, snakes would have been an improvement. Snakes are generally more scared of humans than humans are of them. It would be nice to be around something that was more scared of me than I was of it. The effigies sure weren't. Anna turned again, following a set of switchbacks down the hillside. Something was moving among the trees. I could catch glimpses of things shifting. Rags, perhaps. Grasses. Not leaves. Not in this leafless forest. A low, throbbing sound filled the air, and I nearly jumped out of my skin.
Easy, said Foxy behind. Easy, hon. That one's a mourning dove.
Oh, God, I said faintly. I felt embarrassed, which was probably stupid because being terrified out of my wits was absolutely the most logical thing I could be at the moment. Still, who knew they had mourning doves in, what, fairyland? Hell? I followed Anna. I couldn't shake a sense that I knew her from somewhere, but I couldn't remember from where.
Well, I don't really have context, do I? I mean, if you're used to seeing someone while surrounded by monsters, you don't recognize them when they're just getting a scone at the coffee shop, do you?
I was pretty sure I did not know her from the coffee shop. The switchbacks continued down the hill. I began to see buildings through the bare trees below us. They were made of pale stone or clay, squared off, like something you'd see at Mesa Verde or in the desert around Mesopotamia. There were strange growths off the side of the buildings that at first looked like more trees. We were directly above one when I finally realized that it wasn't a tree, but some kind of odd, lumpy construction of mud and branches. It looked wildly out of place against the square stone buildings.
Some kind of nests, looks like, whispered Foxy.
Once she said the word nest, it snapped into focus. They looked like swallow nests on the side of a building, only grown to enormous size. I wondered what would hatch inside that kind of nest, and then decided immediately that I did not want to know. I would be infinitely happier not knowing. There was absolutely no good that could come of knowing a thing like that.
People like Ambrose talk about forbidden knowledge. Nobody talks about knowledge that is just a dreadfully bad idea all around.
The white man moved up to walk beside Anna. He passed close enough that I could see that his skin had thousands of fine lines in it. They didn't look like wrinkles, but like cracks, the way some porcelain glazes crackle and break. It occurred to me suddenly that he might be an effigy himself, a very old skin over, what, tree branches and wire? Bones? A human skeleton full of hagstones?
Bongo twitched as my fingers jerked on his leash. He glanced up at me, as if wondering what my problem was.
Sorry, I whispered to my dog.
We reached the final switchback. The base of the path led to a square, lit with that gray indirect light. From above, with no trees to block my view, I could look down into the heart of a cold city. It looked empty. The doors were black rectangles. There were no lights. There were only a few things scuttling between the buildings, and from the way they moved, I knew they were not even so human as Anna was.
Maybe the other people are asleep, or they don't want to get close to us. Hell, for all I know, it's like the War of the Worlds, and they're afraid of catching some disease from us.
I wondered briefly if I should worry about catching some terrible disease from Anna, then glumly decided that I was probably not going to live long enough to worry about whether I was up on my current vaccines. Anna herself strode forward, never slowing. Her entourage of clicking, sighing effigies bunched up around us until I knew that they were as close to me as Foxy was. I could have reached out and touched one if I were so inclined. I would rather have gnawed my hand off at the wrist.
Look, I ordered myself as we entered that quiet square.
Look, the horror movie gets less scary once the monster comes out of the shadows. Just look at them. See what you're up against.
I turned my head and saw the ones that flanked me. The fan-headed one I knew already. It hopped like a vulture when it walked. Some of the others, though, I forced myself to study them as if they were some of my Aunt Kate's samples,
something safely under a microscope slide. Rag, bone, wire, stone. Other things, too, natural and unnatural. One had bullet casings tied in among its hagstones. One had the deep ribcage and narrow hips of a greyhound, the ribs stuffed with dead birds and old mouse nests. One was scaled in what looked like black leather until I realized that it was made of bits of blown-out tires. Sticks and stones may break my bones. Sticks and stones may break my bones. It ran through my head with the same maddening jump rope rhythm as the litany of the twisted ones, until the words had no meaning and it was just a rhyme pounding in my blood. There was an effigy that had dozens of thin mud pipes along its back. It took me a moment to realize that they were the nests of mud dauber wasps, the little clay chimneys that get built every summer, all tied together like organ pipes. Two paced beside me on my right, humped and headless, as if someone had built a body and then decided they'd gone far enough. Empty sleeves of some material, cloth or hide, it was impossible to tell, hung down where the necks should be. Perhaps I stared for too long, because one of those dangling sleeves moved as if there was something inside, something turning to look back at me. I jerked my eyes away and fixed them on Bongo's back. "Where do you think they're taking us?" I whispered to Foxy. "Shit, hon. Does it matter?"
"You will be taken to a holding place," said Anna, not looking back at us, "until your fate has been determined."
"But where are we now?" I asked, looking over the effigies at the strange, empty city. I still had not seen another human, or even one as human-shaped as the Holler people. "Is this more of the hill with the rocks?"
"No. The place of stones is a threshold place," said Anna. "One can reach your world and this one from there. Thresholds are powerful, but it is not safe."
"Safe?" I sank my teeth into my lower lip. Anna shrugged.
"The white stone. The stone attracts attention. The Vorish dome over this place keeps it unnoticed. There are things that one might speak with, perhaps even invoke, but one does not wish to live beside them day after day."
The irony of this statement coming from a woman standing flanked by monstrous effigies built of bone and mud and wire was so great that I had to bite the inside of my cheek to keep myself from yelling at her or shaking her or doing any one of a number of things that would undoubtedly get me horribly slaughtered in short order. "Your critters there, based on them stones?" asked Foxy, speaking up for the first time. The man with the cracked skin turned his head and looked at her. His pupils dilated wrong. I'd have thought he was on drugs, except for the bit where I was in a cold city on the far side of impossible, and if anybody was on drugs, I would probably ask them if they'd share.
"They are modeled on many things," he said, "but those are shapes of power."
Most of me was terrified. Almost all of me, in fact. But underneath, a tiny little voice was saying, "Isn't that fascinating? You're under the Vorish Dome. You're somewhere that hardly anyone else has been. Even Cotgrave never got this far into the hills. Isn't that interesting?"
I didn't know whether to embrace that voice or try to smother it. It was like standing on a cliff and hearing the little voice that tells you to jump. For all I know, once you jump off, that voice says, "Isn't this fascinating?" all the way down. "Listen to the wind rushing by your ears. Isn't that interesting? Look at how sharp the rocks are below you. Aren't you intrigued?" Foxy put her hand on my shoulder again. We all kept walking. I truly don't remember very much more about the walk through the city. I think it must have taken at least another 10 or 15 minutes, but it's mostly a blur. I stared at Bongo's ears. Out of the corner of my eye, I kept seeing dark openings into buildings. I wondered if there were other holler people inside, watching us from the darkness. Once I looked up, because we stepped into a shadow, and I saw the branches of one of the nests stretching over the street, connecting the two houses. Something came squirming out of a gap in the branches, something with long, flat limbs, or half-furled wings, dragging itself claw over claw up the structure. It looked soft, like clay, and the branches left deep, bloodless gouges in its flesh. I must have made a noise, because Foxy stepped up beside me and grabbed my arm. "It's all right," she said. "No, it isn't." "Fine, it ain't, but I'm an old lady, and you're supposed to be keeping my spirits up." I croaked a laugh. Anna looked back over her shoulder, which surprised me. She hadn't looked at me when she'd answered my questions before. The laughter didn't sit well in that place, and I was sorry I'd done it immediately. But at least it got me out from under the shadow of the nest. Nothing else made an imprint on my memory, just the dark doorways and the tapping of the effigies and the bits of motion. Finally, we got where we were going. The street had curved around to reach what looked like a slanted stone wall in the hillside. Another dark opening yawned from it, but this one had double doors in it, standing open. Anna walked through them without a trace of fear, and Bongo followed her, and I realized that if I didn't hurry, an effigy was going to go next, and I would be left following one's back into the dark. My stomach lurched, and I rushed through the doors. Despite the width of the doors, the corridor narrowed until I could have touched both sides with my outstretched arms. It was dim inside, but not completely dark. The lighting came from what looked like oil lamps in recessed niches. I wondered vaguely what kind of oil they were burning. Did they have kerosene in hell? Fairy whales? How did it work? If you're thinking that I was focusing on something inconsequential in order to not think about what was happening, you are absolutely correct. "Someone must get the oil and refill the lamps," whispered the little voice in the abyss. The corridor sloped downward underfoot. There were no stairs. It just went on and on and on. Sometimes we would pass another corridor that joined with ours, or a doorway gaping like an open mouth. I lost count of how many questionable oil lamps we passed, how many times my shadow swelled on the wall opposite the niches. And it was a long, long, long way. The only mercy was that there were no echoes. I expected echoes in a corridor like that. But my footsteps fell muffled, as if there was a softness to the stone. I heard the faint tap of Bongo's nails and Foxy's heels clicking behind me, and that was all.
Compared to what I could have heard echoing, the silence of the stone was very welcome.
When Anna suddenly turned right and went into one of the other corridors, I almost stumbled. If Bongo hadn't been leading the way, I might have kept going, half-hypnotized, until I ended up God knows where under the earth. But Bongo tugged on the leash, and I jerked my head up, startled, and Foxy ran into my back. "Sorry," she muttered. I think she was probably in the same state I was. The corridor did not slope here, but it did curve from side to side like a snake. I no longer had any idea what direction we were facing, whether we'd come all the way around in a circle and passed underneath the sloping corridor, or if we were still going mostly in a straight line. What I did know was that the unrelieved stone of the walls began to change.
First, it was only a few small hatch marks around the edges of the niches. Then the hatch marks began to expand, overlapping and twisting, until they became long carved lines that connected the niches together. They weren't straight lines. They would double back on themselves, break apart, then rejoin. We came to a doorway where the carved lines wrapped around the threshold, not quite touching it. Unlike the other openings, there was a door in this one. Anna opened it and gestured for Foxy and Bongo and me to go inside. The room was not large, smaller than Cotgrave's bedroom. It reminded me of a sauna, not because it was hot, but because there were benches along both sides. They appeared to be carved out of the same stone as the walls. A niche stood at the far end with another of the oil lamps in it. I looked at Foxy. Foxy shrugged. I clicked my tongue at Bongo and walked forward. "We will return," said Anna, standing in the doorway. Her voice was even more remote than it had been. It might have been a recording for all the warmth in it. "We must discuss your fate. You will wait here." Foxy looked at our cell, then back at Anna.
"Doesn't look like we've got a lot of choice, do we?"
Anna inclined her head. Under her elbow, I saw one of the humped, headless effigies moving back and forth. Foxy stepped inside. Anna nodded and closed the door.